My guest, he is a terrific broadcaster and writer, one-time employee of the BBC. These days, he presents terrific radio every Friday at 5pm out of Bristol. Links, of course, on the podcast notes later on. You don't need them at all. Let's welcome back to the programme the one and only Tony Gosling. And it was in deference to your work over the years on This Family that you was the only call I made this morning when this news broke. Tony, is this significant or is this some sort of distraction? What do you think?
Well, 99.9% distraction, Richie. I mean, look at Andrew, the extent of his crimes. Supposedly, Evan Davis on the BBC, lying, Mr. Super Lie, is saying that somebody, I think it is called Audrey, was it? Elspeth sent a message in to the BBC PM program saying, oh, look, I found a really interesting email from Andrew. And you know, this has been sent to somebody when he was a trade envoy, and that this has now come from the BBC, been passed to the police, and this has led to this arrest. Well, that's just rubbish. And to be honest with you, I think, you know, there's a massive, massive story behind this, but to cut a long story short, Andrew's been scapegoated. His crimes are nothing compared to that of the royal family and the present government. You know, you're talking about misconduct in public office. We've got an entire cabinet who are friends of Israel, supporting genocide, committing misconduct in public office. They all should be jailed for war crimes in the Gaza genocide. And Andrew wasn't involved in that. And yet he's the one who's arrested. What about Mandelson? What about Peter Mandelson, the guy who is shown to have been doing far worse, in fact, a similar sort of thing, sending emails to people who shouldn't have them whilst in office. And he hasn't been arrested at all. There's all sorts of alternatives that the police have got in situations like this. They can ask people to come in for questioning. But no, they've gone for the dramatic, arrest him. He's now apparently being taken to Thames Valley from Norfolk to be interviewed. And he may be in for a few days. He should be there for 24 hours being interviewed, etc. But the thing is, he doesn't really, he's not got a voice. He doesn't really use his voice in order to defend himself. But he it seems to me, is one of the only royals who's fairly innocuous left. What's he done? He had sex maybe with a 17-year-old. What Mandelson's been up to and what our cabinet and Starmer and the rest of them have been up to is far worse. Crimes against humanity, supporting genocide, etc. But the police, of course, are all appointed by who? By the king. If you look at, they're all the chief constables are specifically appointed by the king. They're recommended by somebody, I think it's an Yvette Cooper or the Home Secretary, whoever it happens to be at the time, who are pliable stooges. And whoever controls the nation is the one who controls the appointments. That's Charlie. To my mind, he should have been arrested decades ago for complicity with the murder of Diana, his wife. But no, you know, we've got to have a big distraction. It's almost like a family squabble. Charlie's in control, and so he can make it look as if everyone wants to hate, don't they? Somebody in power. Oh, we can have a go at Andrew. But let's have a look. Try and have a measured look at what his crimes actually are. And I think, you know, that all the stuff over the newspapers over the last years, let alone the last week or so, talking about Andrew, just ignore the real criminals, the real politicians, the people who've actually been pulling the strings, which is people like Peter Mandelson, Keir Starmer, Peter Kyle, the business secretary, who yesterday was at a dinner meal with all of the Israel lobby, the people behind this genocide. So we're in a very strange country where I think the press and the media is just simply used to distract people these days, and it puts out whatever the establishment, the criminal establishment, wants. And the latest sacrificial lamb scapegoat
might be
Andrew.
Right. You've had a good say there. Let me have a brief say, then you can have another good say. First of all, whether I like it or not, or you like it or not, there isn't a shred of hard evidence linking Charles to the death of Diana. Don't jump in just yet.
There isn't.
Hang on.
Anyway, we can go there.
You can come back on it. I've never seen any. And I have many reasons to despise him. That's number one. Number two, whether you like it or not, or whether I like it or not, everything you said there about the British government and Israel is 100% true. 100% true. I wouldn't take issue with any of it. But the fact is, the British public doesn't care. Again, don't jump in for a minute. They don't care. Historically, when it comes to Gaza, there's always been people like you, people like me, trade unionists, lefties, liberals, who have always spoken for and tried to do your little bit for Gaza. But the majority of the British public couldn't give an arse. Now, the final thing I will say on that is, they do give an arse when it comes to this story and when it comes to Jeffrey Epstein. Now, you're right. This is pathetic to arrest the guy on suspicion of misconduct in public office. 100% right. But this guy is intrinsically linked to Jeffrey Epstein. You probably heard last night on Newsnight a New Mexico state representative, Andrea Romero, saying that she believes that if they start, but she didn't say this now specifically, I've got to be honest here, but she hinted that if they start really searching the Zorro Ranch, they'll start finding bodies there. I interviewed the biographer Andrew Lowney on this programme the other night. He says he's seen evidence, sorry, he's seen information in the Epstein files that suggests people might have been killed and buried in this country, maybe even in Surrey. And maybe that the king's brother might have some information around that. So while I kind of more or less agree with everything you're saying, I don't believe this is small beer, this. This is big stuff, this, if you're talking about international trafficking and paedophile rings where people were killed in sex games and were buried. That's where I'm throwing it back to you. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I don't think Andrew is that sort of person. He kind of represents the old school monarchy under Elizabeth. He was her favourite son. She made no bones about that. And her attitude was, we do a kind of arm's length monarchy. When there's a constitutional crisis or whatever, she can kind of step in and mend it, you know, do a bit of knitting or whatever and sort things out. But Charles is totally the opposite. And that's why she didn't go to his wedding, to Camilla, because she believed in the rule of law. He didn't and doesn't. And you might say the same about God, although he talks about God a lot. The fact is, he's a politician. He's a political. He wants to be, and he always has wanted to be, a political head of state. He's got extremely big views. For example, he believes that Putin is the reincarnation of Adolf Hitler. Well, he's talked about Putin as the new Hitler. He's taken a very strong stance against these Palestinian groups like Hamas. In the speech he gave to Parliament at the time, when just after October, I think it was the opening of Parliament, condemned them as terrorists. He's very friendly with the Israel lobby, seems to be enthusiastic about the Israel lobby. And so he's an extremely political head of state. He sees himself now as, I'm in charge. Well, I mean, I think actually Camilla makes a lot more of the decisions than we realise. He's actually kind of a weak character that's steered by her and steered by others. And of course, there is a very strong, tight establishment. Andrew is outside that establishment. I mean, I think even people like Donald Trump are outside this establishment. They're used and manipulated in various ways. They're easy to prod and push. Andrew has basically been shut up, I think, by after that Emily Makeless interview. We've got a very big establishment in Britain, and Andrew's definitely not part of it. And it's very convenient to rinse him in public. Mandelson, you know, I keep coming back to talking about him because he really is a complete. I mean, how is it? Just explain to me, when you've got far worse evidence that's been published in the Epstein files about Peter Mandelson, what he was up to, both serious misconduct in public office, effectively spying when he was a member of the cabinet, which Andrew has never been anywhere near that high sort of position with that sort of secret information. So he's not arrested, but Andrew is. So what, you know, the police are clearly not doing what King Charles stated at lunchtime today, which is the law must take its course. If the law was going to take its course, then the police would have arrested Charles when he was Prince Charles and not immune to prosecution, as the monarch is, and prosecuted him for his involvement with the death of Diana. And I'd just like to come back to the reasons. If you have a look at John Morgan's book particularly, it documents the minutes of the Way Ahead group, which is Charles's private secretary meeting with the Queen's private secretary, where they decide that something definitely serious needs to be done about Diana, just about a few weeks before she died in this mysterious crash, because she was a threat to the monarchy. And so his private secretary is intimately involved in, I mean, nobody's ever seen the minutes of this meeting, but we know it took place. John Morgan has documented this is something that Charles was extremely annoyed and embarrassed about. The fact that she was strutting around, Diana was strutting around in the 1990s as an ex-insider to the Hotel California Club, the monarchy, and that she was going to have to be dealt with. I mean, this has never been properly investigated by the police. There's been people from the SAS talking about how they believe that the Secret Services killed Diana, and we've even got the French police report, the British police report, and the inquest evidence all points towards this being a royal operation to dispatch Diana. So this is really hypocrisy to say the law will take its course. Charles is the law. He appoints the judges. He appoints the ministers. This guy appoints the chiefs of police in this country. So, of course, this is much, much more like a family squabble than it is like anything the law taking its course. The law is not taking its course.
I think the appointments you just attributed to Charles are in fact political appointments, and he just signs them off, I think. But look, just before...
Oh, yeah, but he's got all these pliable ministers who will give him the names he wants. This is exactly how it works. So people like Yvette Cooper are not thinking for themselves when she was Home Secretary, are they? They just put forward a list of people that Charles wants, and then he will just tick the box. So this is how the establishment operates. We've got an incredibly weak government. This country, Richie, is not governed by the government. It's governed by businessmen.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
Businessmen and the City of London govern the nation. These people are basically just wonks that sign off where they're told to sign off. They're all pliable. They read from a script put in front of them by Morgan McSweeney or some other public relations guy,
and they are not running the country.
Big business.
Come here. Listen, I've been saying it since I was in short trousers. On Andrew, by the way, if you don't listen to the not the BCFM politics show out of Bristol every Friday, if you're not listening to it, you're missing out. You're missing out on this. Tony Gosling is our guest. Thanks for coming on short notice. Here's Kaz. Thank you, Kaz, for rewriting this. Richie, the Lithuanian teen escort Alisa Dmitrieva was 17. She went missing in 2011. Her body was found on the Queen's estate where Andrew had been shooting. I remember it being reported, and I was surprised there was no follow-up. This guy might be a bit of a clown. Jenny Bond, the legendary royal reporter, described him as being entitled and being a bit of an arsehole, and nobody liked him and all of that. But he might not be as innocent as you might be claiming here, Tony. What about Alisa Dmitrieva, who went missing, found on the Queen's estate where this guy had been shooting, and there was little or no investigation into the girl's death? These are serious questions as well.
Listen, I'm not saying he's not innocent of other things, of course, but the point is that we have a criminal government. We have a criminal royalty with Charles particularly. I mean, he's also been involved in all these calls to get the police, which just do everything he asks them to arrest people who just turn up to do a peaceful protest, say, for example, at the day of the initiation of new people into the Order of the Garter at Windsor Castle. People just turn up to wave a few banners and they get slammed into the paddy wagon and sent into jail. This is a total misconduct in public office, abuse of his power. You should let those people just do what they do, maybe blow a few whistles or whatever, and put up with it. But no. Yes, of course, Andrew may well have done wrong things. Of course he may well have done. But I think mainly the guy's a sad old man who, he cheated on Sarah Ferguson, and so he ended up all on his own. He's sitting twiddling his thumbs. He doesn't have to work for a living. And so he's looking for a bit of interest and a bit of excitement. And Jeffrey Epstein knows exactly the sort of excitement that will lure him in. When he was when he went back to New York to chat to Epstein after his conviction, everyone's trying to make out, oh, this is your, you are chit-chat. No, it seems to me that he went over to chat with him in Central Park asking him about how old was this girl? He was getting nervous about what was actually going on.
That's your guess, though,
Tony. I'm not saying the guy's a saint. He may be a criminal.
Yeah, but hang on. That's a guess on your part.
He's nowhere near power.
Hang on. Let's push back. Hang on. But Anya. We're getting bombarded with messages now. Anya says to you, Tony, how can you, on the one hand, say that Andrew was the Queen's favourite, but also he was outside the establishment? Come on, be real, says Anya. That's a good point, that. He's not outside the establishment. Yeah. He's right in the heart of it.
Look, he isn't, though. He had no powerful positions. He was a trade envoy. This is like one of the lowest of the lowest, like being a baronet or something in the House of Lords, you know, very like Osborne was. It's quite like, actually, Osborne got himself into the running the Treasury, of course, which is a very powerful position. But many of these government people like Osborne, etc., they are there sitting, they're just being given their orders. They know you have to do as you're told to stay as a government minister. You start thinking for yourself, you start to speak out, and you're out. So we've got an extremely weak bunch of pliable stooges doing those powerful jobs. I think the real power behind the scenes, what they are effectively is the city, the financial institutions, big business, the business lobby. These are the people that are actually really calling the shots. And you can see this in some of our legislation day to day, which is putting people further and further into poverty. The very basic things that the government needs to be sorting out if you want to have a government is that things like the cost of living crisis by bringing into line the private water companies, the electricity, the gas companies to make people's lives affordable. But I think this royal family and this establishment that we're dealing with are not just at war with Putin and Iran, which, by the way, you could talk about that if you want, because this Iran war seems to be coming along down the road. They are also at war with their own population. We've had this story in Bristol over the last week or so with hundreds of people having to live in vehicles because they can't afford to pay mortgage or rent, now being evicted by the city council. So they're being just, and all the most vulnerable ones of them, mental patients, people on drugs, etc., people who are extremely poor, they're the ones that the council is, ones that can't afford to get a tow, they're the ones the council is targeting and evicting. So we've got actually, I think, quite an evil system which hits and kicks and punishes the poor in this country, but also wants to start fights with Iran and Russia and other countries that they won't actually be able to beat.
Well, to park that for a minute. We'll come back to Iran. We'll make plenty of time for it in a few minutes. I do want to stay with Epstein. So, yeah, quite rightly, to arrest the brother of the king on suspicion of misconduct in public office, yeah, it's a bit iffy, bit sniffy, fair enough. He might spend a couple of days in jail. But he's also wanted for questioning about trafficking of girls through the UK, Luton, Stansted. What did you know? What did you see? Yada, yada. What about Epstein? What about these millions of files? Like Andrew Lowney has been telling national radio and telly, he came on with me, I believe you probably know him as well, Tony. He reckons that what we're hearing about now, or what we are discussing, is only the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's now emerging from these files is that Epstein was with girls as young as 9, 10, 11, and that this was... These were incredibly common gatherings or events, that this was basically constant, right? So this guy, Andrew, was probably present in the company of Epstein and others when children as young as 9, 10 or 11 were being raped, were being abused, and this has been covered up. What are your thoughts now on the Epstein releases? There are still 3 million more files apparently to be released. Yeah. The ones that have been released, some of them are so heavily redacted as to be completely nonsensical. Again, to drop Andrew Lowney's name into it, he is shouting from the rooftops that Donald Trump himself personally is running terrified from these files, and that maybe a lot of the redacting.
I agree. I think the Mossad, who were running this operation, I believe, and you can ask me about that if you want, they have the hard drives from the townhouse in New York, from Palm Beach, from the island. They've got the hard drives. They have a load of people who they have compromised, or powerful people who've been pushed into powerful positions as well, because they've got the compromise on them. So I mean, that's definitely the case, that Donald Trump is highly likely to have been compromised by these people. There was the story, wasn't there, about the threesome. I think that was Andrew Lowney too, talking about that with a British prime minister involved. And isn't that interesting? It could simply be that Tony Blair went along with the Iraq war in 2003 because he had been compromised, and they had this blackmail information on Blair. So he just went, oh, I better go along with it all then. So this is the way these blackmail rings operate, actually. But let's not forget the victims, because, I mean, you talk about what is this really all about. People like Virginia Giuffre, they're talking on the news, oh, she committed suicide.
She was murdered.
You yourself, Richie, I know on your show, have been deeply involved with this whole Epstein thing, because you predicted that he would be murdered in jail, which he was, I believe. You predicted it yourself.
It was an easy one to predict, though, wasn't it? It was easy enough to come up with that scenario, wasn't it?
It's easy for people like us with a suspicious mindset about the establishment and the mass media to say these things, not necessarily for everybody. But look, let's look at the whole... was it really about Epstein? Yeah, he was obviously megally involved. He was the big communicator, all the emails to and from him. He was the sort of public face of all of this. But I don't think it really was him running this at all. I think it was Ghislaine Maxwell. She's the one who will most probably stay alive, might even get pardoned by Donald Trump, because she was the one running the operation. It was the Maxwell household where all these things took place. And her father, Bob Maxwell, I have an old friend of mine who worked for Mirror Group in the 1980s and actually reported on the death of Robert Maxwell, who was running Mirror Group. He died in the islands. But anyway, he died on a yacht in the Canary Islands. That's right. Where what I've heard is that, and in fact, there is some evidence for this, apparently released in the files, although I've looked for it and then I can't find it. Apparently it was found early on. But anyway, the fact of the matter is, for many years, people have been saying, including people like Cy Hirsch, that Maxwell had run out of money in 1991. He was £400 million in debt, or £400,000 it might even. I can't remember exactly how much it was. A lot of money anyway. But he went to the Mossad and he said, I need the money. And if you don't give me the money, I will start writing about my relationship with the Israeli state and the Mossad in my newspaper. And that's when he fell off his yacht, the Lady Ghislaine, and drowned, and his body was found. So he was working most definitely with the Mossad. He was given a state funeral over in Israel. And Ari Ben-Menasseh, who's a former Mossad officer, has confessed to having worked very closely with Bob Maxwell. So this, I think, was what this is the spine of this story, is Ghislaine Maxwell. Epstein was recruited by them and by her after Maxwell's death, when she moved over to New York, to start this a rather more professional operation. It's also worth saying, what was going on in London is very important to understand from a journalistic point of view anyway, is that the Maxwell empire was a financial disaster. Robert Maxwell wasn't very good as a businessman. But do you know who was? Rupert Murdoch. He had taken over in the 1980s. He was running an extremely efficient business. He'd taken over the Times, the Sun. He'd sacked all the union workers at Wapping. And so, the Israeli Mossad are thinking, well, he's a much better bet than this Maxwell, which is why I think Robert Maxwell was expendable after he threatened the Mossad. I don't think he realized how expendable he was. But Ghislaine is born out of that whole dirty deal in the 1980s, where Foreign Intelligence Service, the Israeli Mossad and the Israeli state, with a lot of complicity from the British state, the pro-Israel parts of the British state, decided they were going to off Robert. And this is the spin-off from it, the whole Maxwell operation in New York.
We've had a really interesting question from Seamus. It's for you. Richie, ask Tony, was it him who suggested the royal family ceded breeding rights to the Rothschilds in the 19th century? And if so, if Tony did say this, how could Charles be in such control? Good question. Over to you.
Well, I don't think Charles is in control. He's extremely powerful. He's signing the documents he's told to sign. He's saying things. He's a very powerful figure, but I don't think he really is much has his own mind. You know, so he's one of those people who will just do as he's told. But he knows which side his bread is buttered, and if he wants to stay alive, if he wants to stay as a powerful king, he's going to have to do what the establishment, the pro-genocide establishment, tells him to do. I think that's the way these things work. He, I don't think, is, you know, particularly genius or brilliant or whatever. But I mean, you know, Andrew was in a situation where he couldn't trust anybody. I think this arrest and the way they're spinning it, Richie, I don't know what you make of this, but it's like they're saying nobody's above the law. You know, even the most terrible, dastardly Andrew, there is no real establishment and that everyone can be caught by the law.
Yeah.
That really is just a total psyop, a complete psyop. Because as I said right at the start, there are literally hundreds of people now in top public offices who are not working for the public. They're working for themselves, and they're working for the international mafia, the Israeli mafia, the US mafia, the British mafia, and they're no interest in the public whatsoever. And when we vote, it doesn't make any difference at all. So I think that's one of the important take-homes from today, is the whole media in London is trying to spin this idea, nobody's above the law. Really?
That's a really
Manderson,
good take, that.
Starmer, war criminals, Blair. Yeah. Blair is still walking the streets. Of course they are.
Yeah, that's a really good take, actually. It's a very interesting take, yeah, that it is a psyop on the population to tell them, forget about any notions of a deep state. Look what we do to the deep state when it steps out of line. We arrest him, we throw him into a cell, and we might charge him. It's a good take, that, Tony. Tony Gosling is our guest. You will hear Tony tomorrow at 5 p.m. The wheel will have turned again by then. Tomorrow, thisweek.org.uk, to listen to Tony and his guest live in Bristol. It is a brilliant radio show. Lots of messages coming in on this. I'm going to read one or two of them. You're going to stay with me, aren't you, for another 20 minutes or thereabouts. Let me get to them. Richie says, Grace Lee, would you ask Tony, how are you, Grace Lee, if he has seen the new photo of Ghislaine? She looks more like Kim Jong-un, says Grace Lee. And she hasn't elaborated. This was the appearance, was it, from jail in front of the Congressional Committee, where she said, I plead the fifth. Do you believe, Tony? Thank you, Grace Lee. Do you believe that the Trump administration is going to pardon Ghislaine Maxwell? No.
Oh, that's an awkward one. I think it's not impossible. Of course, Trump has said, he's on the record as saying that he doesn't want anything bad to happen to her. You know, so what does that mean? If she's in charge of this horrific... I mean, he's treading a fine line, old Donald Trump, isn't he? And of course, if I'm correct, and if many other commentators are correct, and the compromise by the Israelis and the NATO and the Western superpower state, they do have it on Trump, then of course we're going to get a war. That's all come out of this.
Tell me about.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know if he's going to go that far.
Tell me about the U.S. naval buildup in the Gulf. That's been ongoing for some time. Some newspapers report upon it as if it's a new thing, but it's been ongoing. We've heard some threats from the Trump administration. The Iranians have said, well, you know, your aircraft carriers can end up at the bottom of the sea very quickly. They're having these talks, right. I think, in Geneva. Yeah, you feel, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounded to me like you believe a serious escalation is more than possible. It might be imminent. Is that right?
Well, it's possible. It's definitely possible. I think this is, you have to remember, there's a game being played here, right? Two sides of the same story. One side is Donald Trump is a bit of a chancer. He's a property dealer. He likes this whole thing of the art of the deal, where you put immense pressure and psychological pressure on your opponent to get what you want from a property deal. And he's translating that into geopolitics.
So it might be that all he's doing by putting these carriers there is trying to get what he wants out of these talks, and he doesn't intend to use them at all. But it could also be, of course, that he had other people have other plans, and he has other plans, that he's trying to wrong foot the Iranians. So this is the game that's being played with the public at large right around the world. Is we are basically playing with your heads. We're messing with your heads, and you don't know whether we really intend to attack Iran or not, and neither do they. And this is the sort of disgusting game that we're now in the so-called democratic West playing with the future of all our kids and the entire world. Because obviously, if there is an attack by the United States on Iran, this could inflame a much bigger conflict in the Middle East with the Israelis with their nuclear weapons hiding behind their back. And it could bring in the United States into the Middle East. It could bring in China to the Middle East. It could bring Russia in. And we could have a much bigger conflagration. So this is the dangerous game that Trump is playing. And we know for many years the Israelis have been collecting compromise on all of these major leaders around the world. In fact, one of the things my colleague Martin Summers pointed out is that certain individuals have deliberately gone to see Epstein, pushed themselves on Epstein, knowing that it would help their political career once they had had sex with underage girls there, that they would get jobs. So they don't care. They just want a good career. They want lots of money. And if it comes to signing a paper, which is going to mean the deaths of millions of people, just as Tony Blair did, that they say, no problem, I'll sign it here.
That's a concept that is brand new to me. Maybe I am as naive as I am accused on occasion. People accuse me. But the idea that people in politics who might be doing well would voluntarily connect to people like Epstein, and they couldn't care less that they're going to be compromised. They will risk it because it will mean advancement for them. That's a really interesting concept.
What they're told,
isn't it?
You see, that there is no risk. That you, once you're in the club, you're protected. Now, that may be true and it may not be true. It may be that they hang you out to dry after a certain time. But you can see the temptation for people to be in the most powerful club on planet Earth, or people that think they are. I mean, this is how cults operate. This is effectively, I think, a death cult that's running the Western world these days. The idea is that we will threaten death, we will dish out death, but if you're in the cult, you're immune to it. And you know, it's just a way of keeping people tight, keeping people in, and keeping people silent and quiet about what's really going on. And, of course, the mainstream media back in the days, back in maybe the 80s or 70s, we did quite a good job on trying to penetrate what was going on in the establishment. Now it's part of it. It really is. It's just simply a part of the propaganda machine day to day, which is pushing out exactly the nonsense that the elite cults want you to hear, want you to see, and it's misdirecting everybody deliberately, as it's been doing today, by making out that somehow nobody's above the law, even Andrew. But this is really is. They're laughing, I think, behind their hands as they're saying these things.
We've had a really interesting message from Scaramouche, and he says, it has been suggested, guys, that the sexual allegations are a distraction from the huge financial crimes that they were all involved in. Now, keep that in mind, because if the unredacted Epstein files are as serious, are as damaging as it is being alleged, that lends credibility to the idea that the next move on the chessboard would be for a major war, because the major war at this point would certainly put the Epstein revelations on the back burner. Isn't that right, Tony? Do you agree with Scaramouche, by the way, that the sexual allegations, as bad as they are, pale by comparison to the financial crimes being committed by these Epstein people?
Well, look, I think actually the biggest crime is the crimes against humanity, the war crimes, the genocide in Gaza, the preparations for war with Iran, which is a totally innocent party in all of this. They must be looking at themselves rather like maybe Poland was at the beginning of the Second World War. Like, what have we done exactly to deserve Stalin and Hitler to invade us both at the same time? You know, so... that, to me, it's this potential for mass war and mass death, the sort of thing we saw back in 1939-45. That's the sort of thing, I think, which is the biggest crime of all. And, of course, you've got the your likes of Larry Fink and BlackRock, which I suppose is what the financial crimes people saying talking about, is that they intend to make masses of money out of, you know, millions of people's deaths and human misery, just as Tony Blair provided for them in the Iraq War in 2003.
For me, when we talk about companies like BlackRock, I'll never forget some years ago. I know you covered it in Bristol. I know you would have done for sure. But I apart from you, I was the only radio producer in the country to cover a story that should have brought down the government, and it should have seen George Osborne in prison for many years. Speaking of these companies, when Osborne was actually the serving Chancellor of the Exchequer, he was also making money by doing a couple of hours' work every month for BlackRock. Tony will know this. And this is what Osborne was doing. While his government was awarding contracts to a company called Carillion. Listen up, dear listener. This is an easy one to understand. If I can explain it, anybody can explain it. Anybody can understand it. Osborne Chancellor, working a bit of a nixer, as we call it, for BlackRock. Major. You know who BlackRock is. Listeners do. So he was, his government, Cameron's government, was giving contracts to Carillion, even though they knew that Carillion was collapsing. While this was going on, Osborne was telling BlackRock on the QT to bet on the collapse of Carillion. Now, this is a fact. Every word I've just uttered is a fact. And Osborne, for doing that and for playing the kept boy, rather than go to prison for 10 years, which he should have done, Osborne was given the Evening Standard. Isn't that right, Tony?
Well, it could be. Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly why he was given it, but I mean, this seems to me to be de rigueur nowadays. The idea is you're only in politics to make a bit of money for yourself and to help out the elite. And this whole thing of voting increasingly year by year, year on year, becomes less and less interesting, less and less relevant. I mean, we've got the most important thing that any government could do right now is to renationalize the infrastructure of the country. This is being weaponized against every single person in this country who's paying for their water bills, their electricity bills, their gas bills, their transport bills. Even actually, do you remember when BP used to be in 50% of it in government?
Yeah, that's right.
Our airports, our ports, everything. The government had a stake in everything which was really could be considered crucial infrastructure. The steel industry, for example. So this is what a government should do. But the only people talking about that really have been the left, people like Corbyn and George Galloway, etc. Galloway has fled the country. His wife has turned the heat up on him and he's had to leave. And of course, there's no representation in Parliament from the Workers' Party.
No.
And as you probably know, Piers Corbyn and others are being blocked from standing for the national executive of this new Your Party, under complete lies and spurious information. So what you've got is the same kind of witch hunts going against people like Piers Corbyn as have been going against Jeremy Corbyn when he was in the Labour Party. So the left has been completely nobbled. I would say, I mean, certainly Piers says this is a Socialist Workers' Party Trotskyite faction. I would say it's MI5 because I think they have been running Socialist Workers' Party and people like that for many years. So the left has been completely nobbled. And so we don't really have any kind of opposition. We've got this neoliberal consensus with the Greens involved as well, who just say, well, we've just kind of got to go along with, the business owning everything. Thatcher's privatisations, which have completely destroyed British politics and the ability of the country to function, never happened. And so there's no alternative to this. So That's the bind I think we're in now.
Yeah.
So there is nobody for the only voting anyone ever does really nowadays is voting for somebody to keep someone else out who's worse. And this, of course, is not in any way a democracy.
That isn't
democracy. We're living in, I think, actually a fascist country, which is corporatist country, which is run by business people who never get elected and never. And that of course, was the Rockefeller mantra. And I would really recommend, if your listeners have not heard it, have a listen to the two-hour interview that Jeffrey Epstein gave to Steve Bannon just before he died. He starts off talking about the Rockefellers. This is naughty, naughty. You know, he shouldn't be doing that, right? But there he is. He's going on about how wonderful David Rockefeller is and how much he's doing and how he said, he actually said that Rockefeller told him that, oh, well, politics isn't where it's at, really. Big business is where it's at because they have continuity over generations. And he's really talking about...
Yeah, but we've known that for years, though. We and many have known that for years. But the general public doesn't pay...
Then why is anyone still voting, Richie? Why is anyone still voting?
Jesus, you used to...
Just to keep someone really dangerous out.
Listen, you should be apologising to me. You used to argue against this, against me. Stop it. I've been very kind to you thus far. I've been saying this forever. Listen, come here and I tell you, our listeners are pissed off a little bit with you. But in a good way, they love Tony Gosling. A number of listeners have said, Richie, why won't Tony give a little bit of credit to somebody like Rupert Lowe and his Restore Britain party? And what does Tony think about the Rupert Lowe organised grooming gang inquiry, where he heard and gave a platform to a lot of victims, hardly mentioned at all in the mainstream media? The grooming gang thing, the people's inquiry headed up by Rupert Lowe, our listeners, some of whom are saying, Tony, what about him? Give him a bit of credit. What do you think?
Well, no, because Rupert Lowe is just doing an old-fashioned divide and rule approach, isn't he? The British Empire
divide and rule.
He's coming because Farage's party looked to be the next government from all the polls, so someone's got to come along and split the right. And so that's what Rupert Lowe's been tasked to do. He's certainly no angel Farage, and I think he's, you know, I don't support him at all. But what I can see is that people are desperate for something which is going to make some sort of a difference in the country. They actually believe in the nation state, and Farage, of course, has stood for that for many years. Whether he'll make any difference is another question. But I mean, I do see Farage as one of the only serious part. I mean, for example, the Farage party and Farage himself is talking about the national debt. He's saying, well, we've borrowed all this money from the banks at bonds. We don't need to do that. We can just get the Bank of England to print money and pay the bonds back. Why don't we do that? It's all at no interest. So that Britain is not paying any interest on its national debt. This is a sensible thing for politicians to be talking about and saying about the financial system. And
yeah,
the only
until...
Part
saying it, hang on.
Also, just a minute.
Until he gets in and he's told you ain't doing any of that.
Look, the only party to challenge the cancellation of May's local elections around the country was the Reform Party. And that's because none of the other parties actually care at all about democracy. They can just see that Farage is going to be doing quite well in that, and they're quite happy to cancel elections if Farage doesn't do well.
Hang on, allow me to push back there. The broadcaster John Pienaar, the day before yesterday, turned Richard Tice inside out on Times Radio, because he said to Richard Tice, and Tice could do nothing but stutter, he said, you promised the local authorities that you took over, you promised there would be no increase in council tax, you would freeze it, or in some cases you would lower it. They're raising it everywhere Reform has a majority. They're liars, Tony. All of them.
Yeah, but that's
every
not, yeah,
single
of course
one
they
of them.
Are. All politics, yeah. They're all professional liars.
Liars, yeah.
But some are worse than I mean, at least if the Labour Party are cancelling, the National Government are cancelling local elections, nobody else has done anything apart from Reform about it. And I'm not saying please vote for them. I think the whole system is rigged. The whole system is fixed. By the way, back to Andrew for a second, because have a think about what Congress was asking him to do, right? Andrew was supposed to go over. In fact, if I was Andrew's advisor, I would say go, because you can then talk about all this stuff openly and in public. People may be ridicule you, but you can explain that you are prepared to dish the dirt on Ghislaine Maxwell, on Jeffrey Epstein, etc. And actually, it might help with evidence to lead to further prosecution. So he could do that. One of the things that this arrest today is going to make it much more difficult for Andrew to then go to testify in front of Congress. This is one thing that they do not want people to do, to go in public, in court, and talk about that Epstein, Maxwell, compromat operation. They do not want anyone to talk about that, because that's why Virginia Giuffre was killed. That's why I think Andrew has been arrested, because they definitely don't. And that's why, of course, Epstein himself was killed. He was a very chatty guy. He would have probably gone to court, gone to Congress, and talked all about it. And that's the last thing in the world they want. They want to silence anybody that was on the inside, just like they silenced Diana.
That Charles Diana thing. I interviewed Keith Allen years ago a few times, and Noel Botham and others, not just Noel Botham. And they were convinced if anybody in the British establishment had anything to do with it, it was more than likely your man Philip. Evil Philip, the Nazi lover. No?
Well, I don't think so. I don't honestly think so. I'm trying to think of the name of John Morgan's book, How They Murdered Princess Diana, The Shocking Truth, I think it is. And he's got all the details in there, exactly of the operation. Sherard Cowper-Coles was sent over to Paris 2 weeks before Diana died to take over as relief station chief for MI6 in Paris. Sherard Cowper-Coles is the guy who should be answering questions about what happened to Diana, but he was not sent over there by coincidence. He was sent over there because the Way Ahead group, as John Morgan explains in his book, had already decided something has to be done about Diana, because she's going on the TV, she's speaking her mind, she's speaking out, and the public love her still.
Do you know,
however much we're trying to tap her and hate her.
It's interesting, because I... Once or twice I get asked, very few people ask me anything, which is a good thing, because I see myself as a reporter and somebody who asks questions rather than somebody who opines, right? You're very good at both. You're very good at opining. But every now and then I am asked about Diana. And I did look into it quite a bit for research purposes when I've interviewed you, when I've interviewed Botham, rest in peace, Noel Botham, by the way, what a lovely man he was, and others. And Keith Allen did a great film, I think. I look at the landmine thing. For me, if I had to have a punt, if it would be revealed next Tuesday, the actual truth, I would go to my local bookmaker, Paddy Powers. Others are available. My punt would be on some sort of military-industrial complex involvement. She was risking not millions or hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in deals by getting Clinton, for example, to agree to doing away with the manufacturing and the usage of landmines. So, to know, Diana might be a little bit like JFK. She might have been like Mr. Burns. I'm not being disrespectful to Diana, but it might be a good analogy. In The Simpsons, Mr. Burns is shot. Lots of people had a good reason to shoot him. Diana had a lot of enemies, didn't she? Lots of them.
Good God. Yeah, I mean, it's a very similar sort of situation to Virginia Giuffre. I mean, they're young. Both of them were young. They would have had decades ahead of them, waltzing in and out of television studios, chit-chatting about the death cult that they'd been part of. And this is one thing that they cannot bear. I honestly think this is the sort of... once someone's in, it is the Hotel California. Once you're in there, if you leave and you start blabbing, it's like, I suppose, the threats that Freemasons get when they get in, that will slit your throat if you breathe a word about the secrets of the Masons, this sort of thing. It's a kind of witchcraft cult that they're in, which is, you are in and that's it. And if you start going out, you start talking, well, they will warn you whilst you're in there, never do that. You can leave and you can stay alive, like Ghislaine Maxwell's doing. She's still alive because she's not talking. And that's the way these sort of things operate. And whatever you do, you don't do what Robert Maxwell did and start threatening your masters, the master of the cult. So, to me, they've also been talking, haven't they, a lot about, it's the women have been the victims, women are the victims. Well, yes and no. But, with Virginia, it looks as if Andy has had consensual sex with her. I mean, it's not totally fair, of course, to call her a prostitute, because although she was basically a whore girl in there, they were having, it seems, consensual sex. Who was the victim here? The victims are both, actually. Andrew and Virginia were victims of this operation, and possibly, like I say, even Epstein too. So it's just the language this whole thing is framed in seems to me designed to just sort of wrong foot the public, wrong foot the reporters, and none of the journalists are really asking the sorts of questions that people like you and I ask, which is, hang on a minute, is this really just about Andrew, or is it about World War III? You know, which is the most important aspect to this small organisation, which was compromising loads of political leaders that have then, and other business leaders, etc., that have then found themselves in position to start this Third World War. I honestly think that's much more important than the stuff about Andrew.
I'm going to thank you for coming on. I have hundreds of messages to read. I will deal with the fallout of you framing Epstein as a victim. I will deal with that in a minute when people start bombarding me. Folks, this is moving, obviously. The place to be tomorrow at 5 p.m. to pick up on what's going on. The only real alternative take you will get tomorrow is on thisweek.org.uk, not the BCFM Politics Show. Tony will be on, Martin, presumably, and a host of very interesting people tomorrow at 5. 30 seconds if you want a quick final word. I have loads to get through before the end. Quick 30 seconds. Thank you again, Tony. Appreciate it, pal.
Well, okay, so look, number one, I guess, is the police could have easily asked Andrew for a voluntary interview. Is he really a flight risk? You know, is he going to flee the country? Or is it someone like Peter Mandelson who might flee the country? You know, the whole way this has been being framed, and it seems to me, is totally upside down. Mandelson is the one that should be in the dock. He is the one who should have been jailed for life for, number one, destroying the Labour Party, turning it into this party where people like Jeremy Corbyn are ejected. There's complete witch hunt over anything to do with Palestine, and to turn it basically from a peace party under Harold Wilson, who kept out of the Vietnam War, into a war party under Tony Blair. That's Mandelson's role, and that's why he's now being protected, and Andrew is in the dock and inside. And it may be, I think they can hold him for up to 3 or 4 days maximum. But the main signal to send to Andrew is, don't even think about going and testifying to Congress and talking about what happened and what you saw over in New York and giving your side of the story in public. And to be quite honest with you, Richie, I was thinking when you phoned me and said something about Andrew, I was thinking, oh God, has he topped himself?
You thought he might be dead. Yeah.
You know, because there's so much pressure put on Andrew. This is exactly what I was expecting. Oh, poor old Andrew is no more. He's killed himself. And this is the alternative. And it may be that we will see a similar thing happening to Andrew as happened to Epstein.
Thanks, as always, for your time, pal. I'll be listening tomorrow at 5. Until next time, thanks, Tony. Have a great rest of your evening.
Cheers,
the great Tony Gosling, live on the Richie Allen Show for Thursday. He'll be on air tomorrow at 5. I won't be missing it. I'll be listening live here at BBG Towers. Catch him and Martin, and they will have many guests. They will be picking up from here and from whatever happens tomorrow overnight. You are listening to the Richie Allen Show live on richieallen.co.uk, multiple other platforms, and my app. It is brilliant to be with you today. Lots more to come between now and 7 p.m.
Yes. Ask not what the BBG can do for you, but what you can do for the BBG. Support the Richie Allen Show now at richieallen.co.uk.
I think Tony said this elite club is someplace you can check in and you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. I think that's what he said. I did hear him anyway. I'm going to have a glass of water. I did mean it when I said there's been a huge volume of messages into the programme. Back with more after this from the Eagles.